I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe James McGrath. He is the subject of the book James McGrath in a Class by Himself, The Life and Times of an Extraordinary American Teacher, Mentor, Cultural Ambassador, and Pedagogical Pilgrim. And we're also joined by the author of this book, Jonah Raskin. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is a wonderful journey that you have lived, James, as a teacher. You're from the Pacific Northwest, where you grew up and had your education. And then you really were, it sounds like, called to travel all over the world.
That's about what happened.
Did you always know that, first of all, that you wanted to be a teacher?
Probably I didn't know it all the time, because I was a stutterer when I was a kid, and when you're a stutterer, you don't want to really be around people too much to talk. But later on in college, that's what I wanted to do, was to teach.
And it seems to me that, I mean, just from reading this book, your teaching is so imbued with curiosity. Mm-hmm. You have traveled to so many places, and what other people would call getting out of your comfort zone, that's kind of your comfort zone.
Yes, it is. I think it is. Traveling and going to foreign places and meeting different people, it is kind of a comfort zone.
What was the first place outside the United States that you traveled?
Teaching in Europe, in Germany, probably was the first place.
And what did you do there?
I taught in an American school, an elementary junior high school. It was a school for children of the military and the business community. And this was in the 50s. And after 3 years of teaching there, both in Germany, I became the art director for all those American schools in Europe, in France and Germany and Italy and Ethiopia and Germany.
And so did you get to visit all those places?
Yes. All of them except Ethiopia. And that was later on in my traveling. I did get to Ethiopia.
One of the things that you seem to really enjoy doing, and that seems to be also very good for your students, is taking them out of the classroom and into the real world, which I imagine, I mean, I know that a lot of kids, and indeed a lot of their parents on military bases, never get off the base.
Absolutely. I was shocked when I was at Frankfort High School teaching, realizing we were in this wonderful city. But it was in the 50s, and it was still, you know, being rebuilt. But there were international book fairs, and there were gardens, and there were museums. And some of those children had never been off the bases.
And so how did they change? How did these young American kids change as a result of getting out of their little horizons?
Well, I suppose they would change like I did when I went overseas and all of a sudden realized that the world was bigger than I thought it was, and there was something there that I really wanted to dig into and learn about, and also be a little quiet about, but look and listen. And being that I was an art teacher, I was able to have them draw then, and to sketch and to paint and to do things that were related to what they saw.
And did they learn from, for example, the European masters who were in the museums there in Germany?
I don't think so, even though, I wouldn't say they would learn from the masters as much as they might learn from themselves or from their classmates.
Now, you were there really at the beginning of the Institute of American Indian Arts.
Right, in 1962.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved with that?
I had been in Europe, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, and I wanted to come back to America. And my teacher at the University of Washington, Pauline Johnson, wrote a letter saying they were opening up a school in New Mexico related to Indians, and in that I was from the Northwest, and I was very involved with Indians up there, that I thought, well, I'm going to see about that school. So I applied to come to that school as a art director. And but the art director had already been hired, but he hired me as his assistant. So then I came in as an assistant, but also teaching painting and creative writing and museum training and design.
And there you experienced a lot of the kind of questioning that Native students are going through about what is my culture, what is European culture, how are we combining them, how are we keeping them separate?
Somewhat like that. I would say they really came in to find about themselves. And that was mainly the thrust of that institution, was having them look at themselves, their own culture, and looking at it through some different new eyes. Maybe they came from a very traditional place, but to look at it through maybe not just drawing and painting, but maybe clay or maybe writing or some other different way. But it was really looking at themselves as not looking at the things from Europe particularly, even though there was an art history class, but it was mainly in the studio work, really hands-on.
Were there many Indian teachers at that time?
Yes, there was Charles Loloma and Audley Loloma and Louis Ballard and Juan Valenzuela and Josephine Wapp and Louis Ballard. I'd say 50-60% of the teaching staff were Indian.
And then there were people like you who were utterly committed, but then during kind of the moment of, what would you call it, real civil rights and protest movements, it became harder for somebody like yourself, a white guy from, a white American guy, to really have a place there.
Yes, it was very difficult, and those of us who were with that background, realized that maybe this wasn't the place we should stay. I mean, in my case, I didn't, and I found another job, which happened to be overseas again, and then I went to Japan. But yes, I recognized that this was not going to be a place where I was going to thrive after that period. And that was after 11 years.
Mm. We're talking to James McGrath about the book James McGrath in a Class by Himself. Now, Jonah Raskin is sitting here. You together, it sounds like you kind of did the book almost. I mean, you wrote it, Jonah, but I imagine it was really made in interviews between the two of you. Is that correct?
Yes, the book was a lot based on talking to James, first on the telephone, long distance, maybe about a dozen phone conversations, and then coming here and talking to James for the first time was for about five straight days, staying at his place, getting up in the morning, having breakfast, talking, you know, from 8 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, and asking
wow.
questions and writing everything down, and then coming back another time and talking to James. And then, well, as you can tell from talking to him, he has a really good memory. I mean, you asked him about Indian teachers from the time when he was at the Institute, and he remembers the names. Well, he remembers the names of his elementary school teachers and the name of the street that he lived on, and who is the girl who lived across the Rose Gardenia Boyle, who lived across the street. So and he also saved, he has great archives. He saved just about every... He saved all of his high school and college papers. So it wasn't only his memory, but documents from the time. So those things. And then he also has maintained contacts with former colleagues and students. So I was also able to talk to students who were in his classrooms and to colleagues of his. And I mean, I first heard about him from three men who were his students in the 50s. And they were talking about their high school art teacher.
So you've taught many levels of art. Mm-hmm. You've taught elementary school and high school and college and kids on military bases, mm-hmm. really all kinds. Why did you go all over the place? You just like teaching every level, or...?
Well, I'm kind of the type that when something comes up that sounds interesting, I take it. I don't know if I've ever really turned anything down. I mean, I really had no intentions, say, of going overseas, except there was a notice on the board at Columbia High School in Richland, and I'm looking for teachers, and I applied, and I got the job. The job here in Santa Fe, I heard about that. I applied and got that. I did get a call about they were looking for this person in Japan to come, and so I applied and I got that. So I've always been lucky to get jobs that were they were ready at the right time when I needed them and when I wanted to make a change. So I was very fortunate to have that happen.
Now, when you were in Japan, it was a similar situation in some ways to when you were in Germany, namely that you were teaching American students mm-hmm. and really getting them to go outside mm-hmm. of where they were living and experience Asian cultures and make drawings and paintings and expressions based on those things.
Right. But I did that, but I also discovered that many of them had not been to America, and here they were in high school. And that, so I was able to start an artist in residence program, bringing in American artists and dancers and poets into those schools in Japan or the Philippines or Korea or Okinawa, wherever I wanted to bring them. So I had the great support from the people who were my supervisors to do these kinds of things. And that made a real impact, not just on the students to see what was happening in America and talking to American people, but also the artists I brought were people who maybe many of them had never been overseas either.
Right.
So they also got some valuable input.
Now, you lived through such an interesting period of not only American history, but art history. So the avant-garde and abstract expressionism and Picasso and all those things were happening, and you were aware of them and bringing them to your students.
Yes, yes.
How did they respond and take in this very new work?
I think like any of us who get something new, if it's interesting to us, we will respond to it. Otherwise, sometimes things come into us that just bore us to death. And I think overseas, however, I tried to bring, like in Japan, Japanese things into the schools, American schools. And I think because they were so close to it, that impressed them often more than bringing in something from America into Japan.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, you also have always had, it seems, a tendency toward real interdisciplinary teaching. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? What are some examples of projects that you've done that bring different disciplines together?
Well, as an example, which I still do here in this country, if we're in a science class, rather than just reading about animals or plants, I will have them get some clay and maybe model the animals in clay. If they're doing a study on plants, I'll have them get leaves and make leaf prints, so they'll make art out of them. Or make plant dyes out of boiling up plants, or maybe making paints out of soils. So I do that in science. Probably in English classes, I might have the students do puppets of the characters they're studying in American literature, for instance. In world history, we might do a mural of some time of history or about a certain culture. So there's so many things that art can support the understanding and expand the students' understanding of what's going on in those subjects.
Now, in Japan, you had your kids do a mural, and some of them chose to do a whole mural of the Chinese zodiac animals.
Right.
And then the priest made you take it down?
Oh, yes, because it was anti-Christian. And that was quite upsetting, because there are also teachers in those schools say there were Korean languages taught by Korean people. So when that happened, that really put down the feeling that was important in that school, and that was kind of sad. And in Japan, we had Japanese teachers teaching Japanese culture. In the Philippines, it was Filipino teachers. But so we tried to bring in the culture, but then there were some attitudes from the American community, they weren't very positive sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's gotten better over the years?
It's a good question. I really don't know. You would hope so, but I think there's still, we know our situation in our country, how diverse it is, and also how very intense the ones that are negative are. So I don't know. I think that would be a good question to find out.
Yeah. Now, we're talking to James McGrath. You have always, and it says it's nicely written in the book by Jonah Raskin, you have always promoted indigenous over industrial mm-hmm. cultures. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that, and what and why?
I think there's two reasons. I think that the indigenous have so much to teach us. They've been around 10,000, 9,000, 5,000 years, and they're functioning, and they have something to tell us of how to live in many ways and how to respect one another. and you might look at that as compared to the industrial side, which is mechanical and cold, I would think, in most cases. So I think there's more of a human element in those cultures that we don't have in the industrialized area. But that doesn't mean they can't come together, because they almost have to function.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and to do things like address climate change, for example.
Exactly.
If you don't have both ways of looking, we're in big trouble.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Did you, James, as a teacher, have any mentors who really taught you how to teach, so to speak?
Oh, I think so. I can think of them back in high school, Mildred Davis, my biology teacher, how we always had our hands on things in that biology lab. And, whether it was a frog or it was a piece of petrified wood or whatever it might be, there was always something we had in our hands. And it just made much more personal what we're studying. And in college, it was Sarah Spurgeon, an art teacher, who got me going out drawing certain things and putting them on the walls, and how she would respond to our work. And I often would remember that, and so it impressed me. So I used some of her techniques often. And I think all the way through, there were always people that I responded to in a very warm, caring way. And I wanted to use some of those skills and techniques in my own teaching. Oh, very definitely there were people.
Mm-hmm. And then you, in turn, have you taught other teachers?
Yes. Like in those big jobs in Europe and in Japan, I was responsible for sort of teacher training. And we had workshops often in the summers. And I would also, in those workshops, one in the Philippines, we rented a convent up in the mountains of the Philippines, and brought in the American teachers along with the Filipino dancers and potters and artists and teachers, and we worked together in different ways and different styles of teaching and different ideas to bring into the classrooms. So there was lots of that working together.
I follow to some extent all the questions and debates about teaching that are going on in the United States now, and in New Mexico in particular, where you've got all these third graders who can't read, and you've got people who don't seem to want to learn, which is really hard to understand. How do you interpret what's going on here now?
Well, I don't think our system is child-centered. I don't think maybe they're really recognizing what a child will respond to and how a child does respond. And they, children are playful, and they make up things, and they are creative. And if you're going to be teaching them to read, you got to have some methods, not just a book, and not just the ABCs, but they're going to have something in there to make it more joyful and more personal for them. That's what I think, anyway, is that I think it has to be much more creative and not just rote as it is.
Right, right. Are you involved at all in these debates and in these questions?
When I came back to Santa Fe in 1985, I did get involved with the New Mexico Arts Division. And I would go into the schools in Lordsburg and La Luz and Albuquerque and here in Gonzales and many different places in the state to bring this kind of ideas into the classrooms as a visiting artist teacher. I haven't done that now for probably 8 or 9 years, but I was very involved earlier about that.
Jonah Raskin, how did you get involved in this whole biography project in the first place? Are you yourself a teacher?
I retired from teaching in January of 2012, but I've spent most of my life, more than half of my life, as a college teacher. I wanted to write a book about education and about teaching. I didn't want to write a book about myself. I've written memoir and autobiography. I've known hundreds and hundreds of teachers in the time that I've been in academia, and James McGrath is really an extraordinary teacher. He's very unusual. I've taught in the United States, in Europe, on the East Coast and the West Coast. I've never met another teacher who's really remotely like him. I was drawn to him and to finding out his stories, and he I mean, you've never heard anybody said that teaching was his art form, as James says. And I mean, that definitely, you know, influenced me, or where he said, it's not so much what the teacher wants to say in the classroom, but like what you want to happen there. Mm-hmm. You have to make something happen. And the use of play and creating the conditions for creativity. I mean, he's really a font of all kinds of ideas for things that students can do. And so I would say that my own teaching, I began this book in 2008, so I taught for 4 years after I started this book, and my own teaching was definitely influenced by James's methods and his ideas. And I would say that my classroom became more collaborative. James often says, you know, that teachers learn from students and students learn from teachers. Sometimes it's the students who are teaching one another, and they're teaching the teacher more than it's the teacher. So I would say that I learned ways to have everybody who is in the room participate in creating the curriculum and figuring out, you know, what they were doing, what we were doing. I would say this is an example of directly something I stole or borrowed from James with a class of 17 and 18-year-olds in the first semester of college. They did a mural in the classroom with watercolors, and I didn't tell them what to paint or what to draw. They had their own ideas. They worked together, and they worked as individuals. I mean, they had Mother Teresa and Gandhi and Martin Luther King, and they had quotations from all those people that they didn't have to look up on Google. They were in their own head. So a lot of times if you open up the classroom, the students will take the opportunity to really be creative and to do things that are sort of wonderful and surprising. They surprise, you know, everybody.
There are, in this book, James McGrath in a Class by Himself, there's a list of teaching tips, and one of my favorites is ask questions, don't give away answers, help students find them for themselves. And that's a wonderful, I think, really for everybody with working with young people in any way, it's a wonderful piece of advice.
Yeah. Right now I'm working with elders at Ponce de Leon here in Santa Fe, and I pretty much use the same things with that group as I do with the group of kids.
So Marichal, the idea of the 10 tips came at the very end, because this is basically not a book of 10 steps to being a great teacher, but very often teachers want to have key points. And so we worked on that near the very end and put that in there.
The book is called James McGrath in a Class by Himself, The Life and Times of an Extraordinary American Teacher, Mentor, Cultural Ambassador, and Pedagogical Pilgrim by Jonah Raskin. Now, James McGrath and Jonah Raskin will be at Collected Works Bookstore tonight at 6 o'clock.
Right.
Having a conversation and signing books, and people can meet you and come with their own questions.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And I'd like now to welcome Diane Karp. She is the executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, and she is with us here many Fridays speaking of the arts. Welcome.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Good morning.
I just want to put a heads up out there for all those turkeys. Beware. They're out to get you this week.
It's so true.
Scary.
You know what I'm making for Thanksgiving this year?
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Cannelloni.
Cannelloni? Is that related to cantaloupe?
No, it's Italian.
Well, it's an Italian. Isn't that how they say cantaloupe in Italian? Cannelloni.
No.
No, they take the pasta, they stuff it with the cheese, the chicken, the meat, the spinach, or whatever they got.
Yep.
It's nice. Are you doing it in a white sauce or a red one?
Both.
The whole 11 yards.
Yes.
You do know we can't any longer say the whole 9 yards.
Why not?
Because those cement mixers, which is what it's all about, are no longer mixers to carry 9 cubic yards. They now carry 11 cubic yards, which means that we no longer say It's the whole 9 yards. We have to say it's the whole 11 yards or it won't make any contemporary
sense.
You know,
you're really a nerd.
I am a mega nerd.
You're a mega nerd. Okay, so what's happening this week?
Lots and lots of stuff, and we're going to start with today. Tonight, the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band is going to be performing Americana and Blues at 8 p.m. at Santa Fe Soul Stage and Grill, right over there, 37 Fire Place. And you can call 988-1234, my favorite number, which is the Lensit Ticket Service.
That's a good number.
And get tickets for it. Other things going on, if you've got children or young people, or you're young at heart or childish, Fancy Clue and the Boarding House Mystery is playing at the Santa Fe Playhouse. It's part of the Children's Theater Productions, and they're presenting local playwright Rebecca Morgan's melodramatic spoof on films from Hollywood that have been lost, the Hollywood Golden Age. And it's really wonderful to go, take children, have a theater experience. The Santa Fe Playhouse is one of those gems. It's a tiny little theater. It's right downtown at 142 East Vargas Street. And it's charming. It's like going into someone's living room and watching a performance. And it's apparently, I haven't seen it, but it's apparently a really sweet performance. Obviously, the last ad that we heard was the performance tonight and tomorrow at the Lensic Performing Arts Center.
Underwriting.
Yes. Fusion Theater presenting Marc Saint-Germain's wonderful play, Freud's Last Session. And I have proof that his last session was not with C.S. Lewis, and it didn't take place at the Lensic. But the play is going to be fantastic.
Excellent.
Yes. The big event for the weekend, oddly enough, is one of the events that makes Santa Fe as extraordinary as it is, and it is Aidan Comfort's big fundraising event.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
There's the Celebrity Chef Dinner, which is going to be tonight all over the place, primarily at La Posada, with chefs from all over the place. I didn't mean the event takes place. And then tomorrow night is the big gala. And I can tell you, all you need to do is pick up Pasa Tiempo. This issue is really focused on that, and it talks at great length and in great detail, marvelously, about Armistead Maupin and Christopher Turner, who are the honorary leaders of the band for this year's Aidan Comfort events.
And Jonah Raskin in a class by himself.
Obviously.
Talking at Collected Works Bookstore tonight.
We
heard about, yes.
That was such a wonderful interview, and I have to tell you that, you know, I was sort of raised within the context of there isn't a right answer. It's that you have to figure out what your right answer is. And sometimes you're wrong, and that's okay.
All right, what is 79 times 32?
No, I don't know that answer.
See?
Yeah, I know. You want me to make one up?
No.
90, okay. On Saturday, there's also an amazing amount that's going on. The Green River Pottery is opening up for their Open Studio annual holiday sale from 9 to 6. And Green River Pottery is one of our marvelous local crafts.
Yes,
groups.
Indeed. I'm glad you're...
And they're over there, 1710 Lena Street. So it's over toward the Lena Street Lofts, but it's on the left before you actually get there. And High Mayhem is having their fall concert series on Saturday night at 7 p.m. And it's called Loud, Louder, Loudest. That may distress some, but it may attract others. And High Mayhem is one of those centers of really innovative, creative music, electronic music, popular music, presenting all kinds of things all the time. And it's at 2811 Siler Lane, off of Siler Road to the right. And I recommend that. Another thing going on is Karen Allison. Karen Allison is a phenomenal jazz singer and pianist who's going to be performing at La Posada on Saturday night at 7 p.m. to raise money for the George O'Keefe Museum, another great center of the arts here in Santa Fe. And you can, again, go to 988-1234 for tickets.
And Jason Lewis is talking about his book, The Expedition, The True Story of the first human-powered circumnavigation of the Earth, Part 1, Dark Waters. And I talked to this guy, he was in the air yesterday.
Yes.
And it is amazing. These guys are nuts.
Totally crazy.
They're totally nuts.
Honest to goodness, I listened to that interview. I walked into work and I said, some people are totally out of their minds.
And
3 days of yachting and they put themselves out into the world to cross the ocean.
They crossed the ocean on a pedal boat, which they built with a bicycle pedaling system.
Yeah.
And they pedaled across the Atlantic. And then they got on bicycles and roller skates and things like that. And it's a trilogy.
Inline skates, please. Not roller skates.
Oh, sorry.
I was listening. But the real point here
but
is
roller skates.
It's at Collected Works.
Yes.
It's at 6 o'clock on Saturday. And for any people who are really fascinated by those who take on challenges that seem completely beyond human scope, go and meet these guys and listen to them. The other thing that's happening on Saturday night that's really a remarkable and exciting presentation is a collaboration between AHA, the After Hours Alliance, the Santa Fe Art Institute, and Lucky Bean Cafe, which is where the old, was it Barnes & Noble or was it?
Borders.
I knew it was one of those big bookstores. Used to be over at Sambusco. And we're presenting Alexis Gideon. Alexis is an animator, a composer, a performer, and he has been working over the last 8 years on taking traditional mythology and turning it into something immediately accessible and very dynamic. And this is the mythology that comes out of Irish mythology. And he's been working on this for several years, and what he's done is he's taken a scientist, Dunn, and a writer. The scientist is the Irish physicist John William Dunn, and the Irish 20th century Irish writer Lord Dunsany, and he's created this phenomenal presentation that is an self-animated, very beautiful, beautiful video. The music that he has written to go along with it, and he will be performing. It's dynamic. It's gorgeous. It's funky. It's a little bit crazy, and it's going to be presented on Saturday night at 6 p.m. If you have any questions about it, you can call the Art Institute at 424-5050 and ask for any additional information that you may need. But this is going to be one of those performances where children can go, old folks can go, people who like mythology, people who like opera, people who like animation and contemporary music. So come out and join us for this really lovely collaboration. We've been working with AHA a lot. And the Art Institute obviously works with all kinds of other organizations in town.
Which is one of the things we love about you, because you're so collaborative.
And it's one of the things that we really love about Santa Fe. There are all these great arts organizations who are willing and happy to work together.
Yep.
And to that, on Saturday night, Dust in the Machine Gallery Conversation. Jesse Vogler, who is a participating artist over at CCA in the Dust in the Machine set, is going to be moderating a panel of, and I'm quoting, researchers, scientists, artists, and administrators, I don't know what they administer, linking image, text, and citation in conjunction with the exhibit that's on at CCA, and it's happening at 4 p.m., so go over to CCA 4 o'clock on Saturday, check it out, and stay for the conversation.
And on Sunday at Collected Works Bookstore at 3 in the afternoon, come and meet Kathy Krieger, who is the author and creator of Rick's Cafe in Casablanca, literally in Casablanca.
Yes. Yeah.
That's at 3 in the afternoon, and basically they took, I mean, we all know the Rick's Cafe from the movie Casablanca.
Yes.
And some enterprising person built an actual cafe, which is there, and wrote a whole book about it.
Life imitates art.
Yep.
You've got to love it. Also on Sunday, the New Mexico History Museum over there at the Palace of the Governors is opening a wonderful exhibition called Tall Tales of the Wild West, The Stories of Carl May.
My,
you're right. My.
Carl May.
And Carl May was this crazy German guy who, and they're showing photographs of him.
How do you know he was crazy?
Well, just listen to this. This crazy German guy who used to dress up either like cowboys or like Indians. He had never been to the United States. But the fascination with the Wild West absolutely was the catalyst for the way in which he lived his entire life. So he has these marvelous photographs. He also was involved in the making of films.
Well, what he did was he wrote 100 novels,
yes,
adventure,
yes,
stories, and some of them were made into films.
Into films, exactly.
And that apparently revitalized the German film industry at a time when it was really down.
And it presented the history of the Wild West from the perspective, primarily, though, fantasized, of the Native Americans.
Right.
So the Navajo warriors and the Cherokee warriors were really the heroes. And usually at the end of the films, when you have this big, you know, dust storm of horses coming in to save the day, it's not the American cavalry and it's not the cowboys. It's the Native Americans who are coming in to pull it out at the last minute. So the German author who revitalized Wild West in Europe and rebuilt German film
and
industry.
A lot of the tourism that comes through Santa Fe, New Mexico is indirectly or directly due to the kind of fantasy about the West created in the imagination of a lot of Germans and Europeans.
A lot of Germans and Europeans, but Karl May was one of the guys who made it most popular.
That's,
and
yeah,
most accessible. Another thing happening on Sunday, if you don't get over there between 3 and 4 p.m. is the talk. The Santa Fe Symphony Orchestra at 4 p.m. is presenting at the Lensic Handel's Messiah.
Hallelujah.
Yes, indeed. And always a rousing experience. And there's going to be a pre-concert lecture at 3 p.m. So if you want to learn something about the history of the Messiah, you can go and do that as well.
Journey Santa Fe is having their Sunday morning event at 11 o'clock. And this time it's Breaking the Silence, Women Driving Change in the World's Most Challenging Places. Nima Namandabu is from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and she is in conversation with Mijan Seli Thobias. okay. Oh, I know who that is. Mijan, yeah. Who is a candidate in international multicultural education and a member of the Journey Program Committee. And KSFR host David Bacon. It's Sunday morning, November 18th at 11 in the morning. And
the drama on Barcelona, the poetry readings. You had John Davis on to talk about this.
Yes.
John Davis, who's the poet laureate of Santa Fe, and he teaches at the Institute of American Indian Arts. So he's teaming up with the creative writing students at 3 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe over there on Barcelona Street. In celebration of IAIA's 50th anniversary, wonderful poetry, spoken word. Check it out, 3 o'clock on Sunday. There's also the concert for Hurricane Sandy Relief. It's the Santa Fe Emergency Residencies that are being kicked back into gear.
Oh, boy.
We are opening the Art Institute to artists and writers and performers from Lower Manhattan and the New Jersey coast to come. And in conjunction, the concert for Hurricane Sandy Relief is going to be local musicians, mostly driven by Joe West and the Santa Fe Review, Joe Manson, Todd and the Fox, J.A.K.A., Jacka, lots of others, from 3 to 11 p.m. at Cowgirl. And the idea is make a donation, and the money will be sent off to help those who are still struggling. 17 days after the disaster, there are still hundreds of thousands of people that don't have electricity or heat,
amazing,
or a place to live. So please come out and support in any way that you can. And if you would like to call the Art Institute, 424-5050, and make a donation to help support the emergency residency, please do that as well.
Now today, Serenata of Santa Fe, all chamber music all the time,
yeah,
presents classic drama with pianist Norman Krieger. It's a whole special day featuring a master class in the morning and an evening performance at 6 o'clock at the Scottish Rite Center. And talented young Santa Fe area pianists will be there. You can learn more about that. And Mozart, Chopin, Beethoven, all sorts of things, and other musicians will be there as well, David Feldberg and so on. And for more information, 989-7988, Serenata of Santa Fe.
On Sunday, all day from 10 to 5 p.m., the annual Contemporary Clay Fair, New Mexico Potters and Clay Artists Group, has a group show and sale of porcelain, terracotta, stoneware. It's at the Santa Fe Women's Club. There is no charge to get in.
And the Santa Fe University of Art and Design Chorus Fall Ensemble Concert is free to the public, and that's happening on Sunday at 4 in the afternoon. It's a set of original songs performed by local indie rock band Tree Motel.
Yeah, and the Santa Fe University of Art and Design students as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty exciting.
And it's at the Center for Contemporary Arts Munoz Waxman Gallery.
Yes, another collaboration, which is just great. Moving on to Monday, the Archaeological Society of Santa Fe is having one of their lectures, and this one is fascinating. Reading about it, I realize there's a lot I don't really know about Santa Fe and its history. It's a lecture called Having Fought and Died Together, Examining the Battle of Glorieta Pass, and it's about a Confederate mass grave that is the result of the Civil War battle that went on at Glorieta Pass. And I think what happens is we often think of the history of Santa Fe not related to the late 19th century phenomenon of the Civil War. So I recommend it. It's at the Courtyard Marriott. There's no charge. And if you want more information, you can dial 455-2444.
And Felines and Friends featured cat of the week this week is Adamo, who's a little bit shy, but is coming along nicely in his foster home. Adamo will purr once she feels secure. She's a beautiful girl with light green eyes and a medium-length coat with brown tabby markings and some white areas. And if you are interested in adopting this kitty, you can call Felines and Friends at 505-316-2281. You can go to fnfnm.org, and you can also write to askfelinesandfriends@yahoo.com.
The Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, which always has some of the most stunning exhibitions, and it has a group of them up, definitely worth going to see, is going to have a lecture this weekend, and I don't actually have the exact date, but it's a lecture about the 50 artists, 50 years to celebrate the history and the anniversary of IAIA. And if you will give the museum a call at 983-8900, you can get the rest of the information on that one, but it should be a really, really interesting talk.
And I got a note from Rob DeWalt, who says Rob DeWalt. Big shout out to Rob DeWalt.
We love Rob.
We do. Alexis Gideon, Video Music's Three Floating Oceans, animated video opera with live musical accompaniment. The opening act, Flying Wall Studios Puppet Show. And all of this is Saturday, tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Lucky Bean Cafe. And there's a small cover to pay the artists. And you can also get Lucky Bean refreshments.
Yes.
Did you read that one already?
I did, but here's the other thing that I have to tell you. The opening act is a local Santa Fe puppet group that are going to be sort of opening the event. And the thing that's nice about this is every penny that comes in will pay the artists. And so it's really just a direct line to supporting creative art in Santa Fe.
And you read the Contemporary Clay Fair.
I did,
okay.
Indeed.
Just check.
Another thing that I want to talk about that's sort of out there and coming up that I want everyone to be aware of is the Circus Luminous performance that's going to be over the Thanksgiving weekend. And I think we need to think about that because we're not going to be here next Friday to talk about it. Circus Luminous, the circus acts troupe that is Wise Fool New Mexico's 10th annual Thanksgiving tradition presentation, will be at 7 p.m. on Friday, 2 and 7 p.m. on Saturday, and 4 p.m. on Sunday, the 23rd, 24th, 25th, at the Lansing Performing Arts Center It's a tradition in Santa Fe that has grown over the past 10 years, and it's extraordinary. So it's local performers, local musicians, local creative arts. It's a fabulous way to celebrate Thanksgiving weekend. Another thing that's going to be out there is the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet's annual holiday presentation.
Yay.
Of The Nutcracker.
Yay.
That will start Saturday, the 1st of December at 5 p.m., and then Sunday, the 2nd. And it's at the Lansic, again, 988-1234. Ingrain that number on your hearts, folks. And call,
it's not already.
Call often, because everything that goes on at the Lansic is pretty amazing.
Another. Did you talk about the Santa Fe Art Auction? The Santa Fe Art Auction. Preview of the Santa Fe Art Auction is today from 10 in the morning till 8 in the evening. And
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah,
so
and then
tell me.
Tomorrow from 9 to 1, live auction tomorrow at 1:30. You can download a free catalog. Well, let's see. Let me see if there's a telephone number here. So it's santafeartauction.com, and the phone number is 954-5858.
The other thing I want to mention is not only is A Wise Fool presenting the event Circus Luminous, but in December, but they're having a 10th year fundraising gala dinner, and it's 6:30 to 9 on Sunday, November 25th, again on Thanksgiving weekend, at the Taberna La Boca, which is La Boca's little tapas restaurant.
It's so good.
So good. So sweet.
I could go broke there.
We don't want to talk about that piece.
I'm not saying it's expensive. I'm just saying it's so good.
I know. It's a little bit expensive, but we need to help all of these creative organizations. So if you can, go out and support Circus Luminous. The other thing that I want to talk about is the Santa Fe Film Festival. The Santa Fe Film
Yay.
Festival has been revived over the last couple of years, and it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And you can come out and support it from December 6th to December 9th. We have no way of thanking effectively the people that put this together. It is accessible. The screenings are phenomenal. You get to hear and meet and see the directors and the producers and some of the actors. And it's a little bit like what the Sundance Festival used to be like before it got so big that it became unpleasant. So take advantage of it. Support them. And if you can, on Wednesday the 5th, the night before the festival, they're going to have a screening of Now, Forager, a film about love and fungi, with a Q&A with co-director Jason Cortland at the New Mexico History Museum. And following that, there'll be a three-course dinner. It's their pre-festival fundraiser. Please come out and support them as well. And if you want more information, that's 988-7414. And the other thing I want to talk about is that on December 5th, Wednesday, the Lannan Foundation Literary Event. How lucky we are to live in the city with the Lannan Foundation.
Yes, indeed.
They're going to be bringing Hamid Dabashi, who's going to be talking about Iran with alternative radio host David Barsamyan. And I think it's very important for everybody to have a sense of the powerful culture and the powerful history of the country, Iran, Persia. We tend to listen to the media and hear them vilified and created as like the greatest threat that's presented to the U.S. It is not so. We need to be open-minded and hear both sides of this discussion. And the Lannan Foundation on Wednesday at the Lensic is going to be bringing it to us. Imagine that you can hear the things that you do get to hear presented by the Lannan. All the height of intellectual and cultural and creative minds.
And then they are rerun on Sundays. The recording is run on Sundays on KSFR in the afternoon.
Yes, and it is a resource and a point of pride for the city that we
yes,
have access
indeed.
To all of these amazing creative and intellectual thinkers.
Well, Diane Karp is the director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, which is on the web at sfai.org.
One more quickie. I apologize.
4450 is their number.
Snow Poems, which is the project of Edie Song, is a community poetry presentation. They're going to be stenciling the poetry in fake snow on windows, so
nice.
It's really public. And the application and submission begins November 17th. That's Saturday. We'll go on through the 17th of December. Please go to snowpoemsproject.com.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. It's time to go. Diane, thank you very much for being here. And
hasta la vista.
Ciao.